I'm Eric Rosales. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, Pope Leo XIV appoints his first U.S. bishop. We'll tell you who and where. Tragedy in D.C. after an Israeli couple is gunned down late last night, we speak with someone who was near the scene. And the big, beautiful bill passes the House by a razor-thin margin. What's in it and what happens next? Plus...
Regina Celi, Letare.
Singing with the Pope will show you a new series that's all the rage and how you can join in. These stories and much more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for being with us on the Feast of St. Rita of Cascia. I'm Eric Rosales. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump calls the killing of an Israeli couple horrible, and their murders were based, quote, obviously on anti-Semitism. Last night, two staff members of the Israeli embassy in Washington, D.C. were shot as they were leaving an event at a Jewish museum. The young man and woman were soon to be engaged. The suspect shouted, "Free Palestine," as he was being arrested. For the latest, let's check in with White House correspondent Owen Jensen. Owen.
Eric, good evening to you. President Donald Trump also said in his post that hatred and radicalism have no place in the USA. And he sends his condolences to the families.
Yaron Leshinsky, an Israeli citizen, and Sarah Milgram, an American, both murdered while leaving an event at the Capitol Jewish Museum Wednesday night. In the press briefing room today, Caroline Levitt telling reporters,
President Trump is saddened and outraged over the brutal murder of two Israeli embassy staff here in Washington, D.C. last night. Yaron Leshinsky and Sarah Milgram were a beautiful young couple.
Police say the suspect is 31-year-old Elias Rodriguez of Chicago. The suspect approached a group of four people and opened fire, then walked into the museum after the shooting and was detained by event security, shouting,
"Free, free Palestine! Free, free Palestine!"
U.S. Attorney General Pam Bondi, near the crime scene, told reporters, "Our Jewish community must feel safe."
They were at a religious event right around the corner from where we're standing, a religious event with friends and with coworkers. They walked outside to go home and were gunned down. That cannot happen in our community.
In Chicago, law enforcement arrived at an address associated with the suspect. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, Senator John Thune said it's appallingly clear that event attendees were deliberately targeted.
My prayers today are with the families of the deceased, with event attendees, with the employees of the Israeli embassy, and with all the members of the Jewish community suffering in the wake of this attack.
Yaron and Sarah weren't the victims of a random crime. The terrorists who cruelly gunned them down did so for one reason and one reason alone. He wanted to kill Jews.
One colleague of Sarah Milgram described what she was like.
Sarah was kind, passionate, very brilliant woman, young woman that cared deeply about what she does.
And this reaction to the killings from the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations.
But, you know, we have seen what happened in the last few weeks. We have seen the incitement on campuses. We have seen the incitement in many places. And unfortunately, today we faced a horrible terror attack against innocent people.
President Trump and Prime Minister Netanyahu spoke by phone today about the shooting. The attack comes as anti-Semitic acts are on the rise. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And joining us now is Eduardo Kornwarsel, a Boston University student who was ironically attending the Orthodox Union Advocacy Center's training on confronting anti-Semitism just a few blocks away from the shooting. Eduardo, thank you so much for joining us. And first off, I just want to get your reaction to the horrible events which took place last night in the nation's capital.
Yes, thank you for having me. It really is appalling to see how in a nation that we pride ourselves with combating anti-Semitism and fostering a sense of unity and belonging, and as a college student, I come on this fellowship to learn about how to combat anti-Semitism, meet with individuals. As you said, it's ironic. We see just a few blocks away, literally 5 minutes away from where we're staying, a horrific shooting that took the lives of two individuals who were just simply attending an event with their job with the American Jewish Committee. And it's truly unfortunate to see. It's a crazy reality we live in.
Most definitely horrific event. And as we mentioned at the very top, you were actually in town for an advocacy training on anti-Semitism. And what do you see on a daily basis in terms of anti-Semitism and what kind of work you're doing to combat that?
Yes. So it's no secret on college campuses specifically, anti-Semitism has been an all-time high. It's growing at a horrific rate. Fortunately, Boston University hasn't been as impacted in terms of violence as other colleges. However, that doesn't mean that we're immune to it. We have experienced numerous boycott, divestment, and sanctions referendum, BDS referendums targeting Jewish students. We have experienced swastikas show up on our campus. So myself, I'm in the Boston University Students for Israel organization, as serve as a secretary, and among other organizations. And what we really try to do is we try to foster the sense of belonging through dialogue.
Yes, unfortunately, they do continue. And just want to thank you so much for joining us. Eduardo, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Meanwhile, conditions are worsening in Gaza as Israel ramps up its relentless campaign against Hamas. Video from the Al-Awada Hospital shows the damage after Israeli tanks fired on the building. The hospital was one of only two surviving medical facilities in northern Gaza. Its director says Israeli forces bombed the third floor and used tanks and drones to shoot the hospital's fuel tanks. Iran is responding after intelligence shows Israel may be preparing for an attack on its nuclear facilities. Iran's foreign minister said that the country would take, quote, special measures in order to defend its facilities. It's unclear what those measures would be. Israel has not acknowledged any plans or preparation to strike Iran. Meanwhile, back here in Washington, D.C., a major victory for House Republicans and Speaker Mike Johnson. Early this morning, the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill, well, it contains most of President Trump's domestic agenda. It passed the House and now moves on to the Senate. But it wasn't easy. It took days of arm twisting by GOP leadership and President Trump to get a dozen Republican holdouts on board. Speaker Johnson was in the chair to announce the final vote.
On this vote, the yeas are 215, the nays are 214, with one answering present. The bill is passed.
Republicans were all smiles at a victory news conference.
Today, the House has passed generational, truly nation-shaping legislation to reduce spending and permanently lower taxes for families and job creators, secure the border, unleash American energy dominance, restore peace through strength, and make government work more efficiently and effectively for all Americans.
Take this as a lesson. Don't bet against the House Republicans. We've shown time and time again that we deliver for the American people, especially when it matters most.
Congressman Thomas Massey, the only Republican to vote against the bill, accused his GOP colleagues of using phony math.
This bill dramatically increases deficits in the near term, but promises our government will be fiscally responsible 5 years from now. Where have we heard that before? How do you bind a future Congress to these promises? This bill is a debt bomb ticking.
The Congressional Budget Office estimates the bill will add over $3 trillion to the deficit over the next decade. It has a number of tax and spending cuts and even some wins for pro-life Americans. No tax on tips or overtime for the tax years 2025 through 2028. Cuts Medicaid by at least $716 billion and adds new work requirements for some recipients. Cuts $300 billion for food assistance programs like SNAP over the next 10 years and defunds Planned Parenthood while it boosts the child tax credit. Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America, called it a crucial win against the abortion industry. House Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries warned Republicans will pay at the ballot box in 2026.
But this day may very well turn out to be the day that House Republicans lost control of the United States House of Representatives.
As we mentioned, the bill still has to make it through the Senate, but to give us a little bit more perspective on the One Big Beautiful Bill, we're joined with Ryan Walker, Executive Vice President of Heritage Action for America. Ryan, great to see you again. First off, give me your reaction to this bill passing, and so many Republicans, they had to have their arms twisted to get it out of the House.
Yeah, that's right. And thank you for having me on. I think this is part of the legislative process. We have a lot of members that represent very distinct communities around the country, and all of them have a parochial interest in this bill and different aspects of it. And so this is the legislative process. You have to trade a piece here to get a win there. And we're very happy here at Heritage Action that this bill ultimately got across the finish line in the House.
Definitely. Pro-life organizations are praising the fact that, as it's written now, Planned Parenthood would no longer receive federal tax dollars. Give us your insight on that.
Yeah, I think it's a great provision of the bill. This is something that Republicans and conservatives have been fighting for decades, honestly. And so for the first time, a Republican-controlled Congress is putting in funding restrictions for Planned Parenthood. It will have an enormous consequence on the future of our nation. We will have more children in this nation. And the bill also focuses on the family. It expands the child tax credit. It has a number of other provisions to make sure that moms and dads across the country are able to raise and rear those children that are going to be, welcome to this world because of that provision.
As we know, Speaker Johnson has the slimmest of margins out there in the House, and several Freedom Caucus members are speaking out against this. But in the end, they actually did jump on board and vote. And what do you make of this infighting? Is this just part of democracy and lawmakers expressing their feelings?
I think it is a part of democracy and lawmaking. I think these members are very interested in the debt and deficits. Look, we're $36 trillion in debt. We've run a trillion to $2 trillion annual deficits for a number of years now, especially under the Biden regime. And these members were fighting tooth and nail to make sure that there were the maximum number of spending cuts in the bill that we could get. And that is their interest in this bill. And at the end of the day, they were heard and those provisions were added to it, over $1.5 trillion in spending cuts in this bill. And they're going to continue to fight for more.
Yeah, one of the things was these workforce provisions. They was going to be 5 to 6 years down the line. Now they're going to be in for next year. So that's definitely good. But Democrats out there, they're speaking out about cuts with Medicaid and how Republicans are going to pay at the ballot box come 2026. Do you think that the GOP could actually lose the House in that election?
No. Listen, the American people voted for Donald Trump and the Republican majorities in both the House and the Senate. I think that they want lower taxes. I think that They want accountability in federal spending programs like Medicaid. They want people to be able to be required to work to be able to receive some of these assistance programs. And so the Republicans will have very easy responses to this. This is about right sizing the federal government, making sure that money is not going out the door to folks who don't deserve it.
Hey, Ryan, we appreciate your insight as always. Executive Vice President at Heritage Action for America. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
A federal judge has blocked President Trump from dismantling the Department of Education, ruling it cannot be done without congressional approval. A U.S. district judge out of Boston also ordered the agency must reinstate employees who were fired in mass layoffs. Several school districts in Massachusetts and the American Federation of Teachers brought the lawsuit against the Department of Education. The lawsuit claimed the Trump administration shouldn't be allowed to carry out responsibilities required by Congress. Now, the Trump administration is firing back, saying the layoffs are aimed at efficiency, not a department shutdown. However, the administration does admit that it does want to close the Department of Education, but recognizes it must be carried out by Congress. It is appealing the decision. The Trump administration has revoked Harvard University's ability to enroll international students. The White House says thousands of current students must transfer to other schools or leave the country. The Department of Homeland Security announced the action, saying Harvard has created an unsafe campus environment by allowing, quote, anti-American, pro-terrorist agitators to assault Jewish students on campus. Harvard said it is fully committed to keeping its ability to host international students and scholars. Pope Leo XIV has appointed his first U.S. bishop. Auxiliary Bishop Michael Pham will take over the new position. Bishop Pham was born in Vietnam, but studied in San Diego and was ordained a priest in 1999. He fills a spot left vacant when former Bishop Robert McElroy was moved to the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. Well, we still have a lot more to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a big decision from the U.S. Supreme Court as it blocks the creation of a religious charter school, why it says such a school would violate the Constitution. And a deadly scene in California after a private plane goes down in San Diego. What we know about the crash. Welcome back. The U.S. Supreme Court came out with a number of opinions today, one of which blocks the creation of the nation's first religious charter school. The court was split 4-4 over whether to allow taxpayer funds to go to St. Isidore of Seville Virtual Charter School in Oklahoma. So it leaves in place a lower court's decision, which ruled a taxpayer-funded religious charter school would violate the constitutional clause to keep religion separate from government. Catholic Justice Amy Coney Barrett recused herself, leaving the 9-member court eventually to be divided evenly. The organization Alliance Defending Freedom, representing the board, issued this statement. The U.S. Supreme Court has been clear that when the government creates programs it invites groups to participate, it can't single out religious groups for exclusion, and we will continue to work to protect this vital freedom for parents and students. We now turn to Amy Howe, reporter for SCOTUS Blog, and thanks for joining us, Amy. As always, we want to get your reaction, first of all, to this U.S. Supreme Court decision today.
It wasn't that much of a surprise. The court seemed divided at oral argument. We don't know how the justices voted. Literally, all that they issued today was a single piece of paper with a single sentence that said the judgment of the Oklahoma Supreme Court is affirmed by an equally divided court or something along those lines. But you know, it seemed pretty clear that there were a couple of justices, the court's liberal justices in particular, at the oral argument, who were likely to side with the Republican Attorney General, Gentner Drummond, who was opposing the charter school, and that there were a couple of justices, including Justice Brett Kavanaugh, who were likely to side with the charter school. It really seemed likely to me to come down to Chief Justice John Roberts, who asked questions on both sides. But again, we don't know how the justices voted.
Now, we understand that Catholic Justice Amy Coney Barrett recused herself. Do we know the reasons behind that?
We don't know for certain. And some justices, when they recuse themselves, they're not required to explain why they recuse. Some justices, when they recuse themselves, will add a little parentheses, something along the lines of prior judicial service, that they were participated in the case at an earlier iteration before they were a Supreme Court justice, or prior government service for Justice Elena Kagan, who was the Solicitor General of the United States. Notre Dame, the Notre Dame Religious Liberty Clinic, represented this charter school in this case, and Justice Barrett, before she was a justice and before she was a federal judge, taught at Notre Dame's law school for 15 years.
Right.
She's also a very close friend of a law professor at Notre Dame named Nicole Garnett, who's been one of the leading advocates and leading scholars on the issue of the providing public funds for private religious schools. So that may be involved as well. But again, we don't know.
This case is so interesting. How does it compare with similar cases the justices recently ruled on?
So the charter school, much along the lines of the statement by the Alliance for Defending Freedom, was really trying to say that it was just sort of the fourth in a line of cases in the last 8 years. The justices have issued 3 cases in which they have sided with parents and religious institutions that against the states on the issue of whether or not states can exclude religious institutions and parents from these state-run programs that provide public funds for their programs like playground resurfacing. There was a case out of Montana involving tax credits for scholarship programs. And then there was a case in Maine involving the use of public funds for tuition. And the argument that the charter school made was that this is sort of what, just like that, that you can't, if you're providing public funds for private use, you can't exclude religious charter schools, that this is in fact discrimination. And that argument didn't get 5 justices this time around, but the question could clearly come back to the Supreme Court in another case in which Justice Barrett might not be recused.
Amy, thank you so much. We always appreciate your insight. Thanks for joining us.
Great to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Well, death and destruction inside of a San Diego, California neighborhood after a private plane crashes. Fire investigators are looking into the possibility that the plane may have hit some nearby power lines. Take a look at this destruction, folks. 8 people on the ground were injured, and fire investigators say at least 2 people inside the plane were killed. The exact number on board is still unknown, but the plane can hold up to 10 people. More than 15 homes were destroyed, along with several vehicles. The Cessna 550 took off from Wichita, Kansas, and was headed to a small airport in San Diego when it went down. Philippine officials have condemned the Chinese Coast Guard after it used a water cannon to target a pair of Philippine fishing boats. Manila officials say that the incident caused damage to one of the fishing vessels and endangered the crew itself. The water cannons were used as the Philippine vessels were conducting routine scientific research. The Chinese government blames the Philippines for the collision, saying that the boats entered the waters illegally without China's permission, that is. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, Music for the Soul. Find out how you can learn to sing with the Pope. Plus, the childhood home of Pope Leo XIV may become an historic site. We'll tell you all about it. The Vatican Sacred Music School is seeking to teach Catholics worldwide how to sing ancient Gregorian chant to help them participate actively in the liturgy. EWTN Vatican journalist Benedict Sittigren tells us more about their initiative, quote, "Let's Sing with the Pope."
The Pope appeared on the balcony of St. Peter's Square and he intoned the Regina Caeli.
Regina Caeli.
And he intoned it very well, and people wanted to join, and some of them did, and some of them kind of were a bit, you know, not so sure about this. And I thought, well, I can help them. Let's pull off this project and let's have people sing with the Pope.
Let's Sing with the Pope is the name of the new initiative launched by the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music in Rome in collaboration with the Vatican's Dicastery for Communication. The aim of the short educational video tutorials on social media is twofold. First, it is to make the Church's rich heritage of Gregorian chant accessible to all. But it is also to help the people of God sing along the Holy Father during the upcoming liturgical celebrations.
This is Father Robert Mielhardt from the Pontifical Institute of Sacred Music in Rome. Welcome to Let's Sing with the Pope.
Simply put, the initiative invites the faithful to raise their voices in song alongside Pope Leo XIV, who has done so himself several times since his election.
He has a lovely voice. He's an experienced singer. So he lived most of his life in a monastic community, in a community of friars, where, you know, singing the office is a daily thing. The second thing is that he's an Augustinian. And St. Augustine was very sure that, you know, to pray in song is a very, very pleasing and good thing. There's this famous adage, who sings praise twice. So who sings glorifies God and preaches the word of God even more than we could do it only with our words.
With the help of students at the Pontifical Institute, Father Robert teaches his worldwide audience how to read and sing simple musical notes. But he also explains the meaning behind the profound Latin text as well.
This which Father Robert has begun is so timely. So timely because people seem not to enjoy the chant because they don't know it. So having someone who is bringing it, it's more like a revival. Father Robert is re-evangelizing the people again. Not just on the local aspect, but globally. I mean, at the comfort of your home, you can take your phone. Okay, oh, let's sing with the Pope.
While the exact reach of the videos is still unknown, Father Robert says the comments he reads on social media are giving him a sense of how they are touching both believers and non-believers alike.
It's fantastic to read those comments because it's so encouraging for us as Institute and for the students and for all the people that want to help people glorifying God by song. And so the best comment I've read was, Father, you made an atheist sing with the Pope. I think that's just glorious, and it brightens up my heart as a preacher.
In Rome, Benedictia de Grian, EWTN News Nightly.
Beautiful sound there. Well, the childhood home of Pope Leo XIV may soon become an historical site. The village of Dalton, Illinois, is seeking to acquire the pontiff's former home, and the home's current listing broker is more than eager to work with the village to come to an agreement. The Archdiocese of Chicago is also working with the city to acquire the home. The home is a three-bedroom, three-bath, 1,050-square-foot home. The Chicago White Sox are honoring Pope Leo XIV in a very special way at their ballpark. Take a look at this. This is the new installation at Section 140. That's a section where then Father Bob, now Pope Leo, sat for Game 1 of the 2005 World Series. The artwork features the image of the Pope waving along with the TV broadcast that caught him on camera all those years ago. We want to thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Eric Rosales. Have a good night. God bless y buena suerte.